morning. I'm Evan Bray. Great to have you here. A day closer, a step closer to the weekend. The actual official start of summer hits us this weekend. And don't forget, coming up just after 11 o'clock this morning, our friend Sean Sherwood will be here. Poulin's Exterminator. Summertime means lots of good things, but a few pests as well. So it's a full hour with Sean, which is an opportunity to talk about what is keeping him busy this time of the year, but really an opportunity to answer your questions. So after 11, phone and text lines will be open for you at 1-877-332-8255. If you have a question for an exterminator, Sean will be more than happy to help you out with some hints to keep your summer pest free. Well, we have been following a fairly full week of politics here the last little while, especially with the G7 that started and wrapped up earlier this week. Lots of observations there. But I do want to look at the deeper look into not just what is happening as a result of those G7 meetings, what are some of the follow-up steps going to look like, but business continues to run in Ottawa. So while the Prime Minister may have been out west for the G7 meetings, we see business continuing to run. And so the stories continue to get generated. And as I'm preparing for this show every day, there's a variety of sources that I'll go to for information. Blacklock's Reporter is one of them. The website blacklocks.ca is always a great place. If you're on social media through Twitter, it's at Minding Ottawa. A great place to stay up to date on all of the information. So if we're in search of some facts, we're dialing in on issues that affect you and I, I'm always happy to have someone who responds to the bat signal when I flash it out. And Tom Korski, who is the managing editor of Blacklocks Reporter out of Ottawa, has responded once again today. How are you, Tom?
I will. Thank you, Evan.
So the G7 summit this week, observations from that?
Low expectations are the key to happiness. Everyone seemed to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
A slight problem for the Prime Minister. He set a high bar when he was running for the Liberal leadership, which is not ancient history. That was only in January and February. And he said he was going to be the results guy. Not talking, getting results. And the bar he has set has not been fulfilled. Fair enough. It's only been a few weeks, but there is that expectation that he did set. And now with these rolling deadlines, these crazy rolling deadlines on tariff talks, but there are starting to be, for instance, there's steelmakers who are getting very, very agitated because they're paying cash on the barrel under those tariffs. And there is some pressure on the Prime Minister to deliver at some time. Grace periods are, it is a period. It's not to infinity. And that's the standard he set, and he'll rise or fall on that.
So on that note, Tom, we relationships are probably the foundation of where this goes. The rubber hits the road when we start to see action. But whether it's with U.S. President Donald Trump here in Saskatchewan, our Premier Scott Moe, there seems to be very early days, but a bit more of a conciliatory relationship than we've seen in either of those regions before. Is it too early to start marking a report card on Mark Carney?
I think it is, but isn't it interesting to note that in the absence of his predecessor, everyone is willing to give it a little bit more of a try. And that tells you how galvanizing a figure Trudeau was when he would go to these G7 meetings and wear the sexy socks or make a pithy point of phrase reading off the teleprompter. And it just started to get on everybody's nerves. And isn't it interesting that with him out of the picture, that people are slightly less on edge and willing to give issues a try that were unthinkable because he was just that kind of character. Mm-hmm. That part of that's 10 years in office, and part of that was Trudeau's personality. But no one could get on people's nerves like that man.
Tom Korski, managing editor of Blacklock's Reporter. So I'm curious, do you think, you are there every day on the pulse of what's going on in Ottawa. So we're talking about external relationships. What about the relationship with the Conservatives and Pierre Poilievre? Pierre Poilievre, likely will see him run in that Alberta seat this summer. We'll see him back in the House. Do you expect a new tone in the House?
I do not. And I think the problem is this is not inside baseball. This is the whole works. This is fascinating. Something really interesting happened on election day, aside from the obvious. When the New Democrats lost party status, they lost committee assignments. in a majority government, no one really pays any attention to committees because it's just an empty ritual. In a minority parliament, the committees run the show, and they did last parliament. They issued the subpoenas. They inspired RCMP raids on federal contractors. They compelled release of the embarrassing documents. But the NDP, when they had party status, could always be a semi-reliable vote for the Liberals in committee, and that's all gone now. The Conservatives and the Bloc Québécois have a lot in common. People don't understand that sometimes. They have the same worldview on issues like provincial rights, on money, on ethics, on resentment of the Liberal establishment. And the cabinet is already landed in big trouble in committees because they lost Mother's Little Helper, the Federal New Democratic Party. The signs, in terms of the running of the works, they are not good, Evan. They face some real challenges for Carney. This is going to be a chore.
Tom Korski is my guest, BlackRock's reporter. So should we not be surprised that it looks like we're going to have about a $50 billion deficit for the federal government this year? Is it maybe too early to measure them on debt servicing and trying to dig us out of this hole, given the fact that they just were put in power?
Valid point, except for the fact they didn't introduce a budget. The Department of Finance had a budget ready to go, and they didn't want to introduce it. That's unacceptable for the local school board, let alone a G7 country. Everyone else has to present their 2025 budget pretty soon after the start of the budget year, which is April 1st every year, everyone knows. And cabinet wasn't interested. And the only reason that could be found for delaying this until way down in the fall is because of that deficit number. The $50 billion you mentioned is an estimate from the budget officer, said could be $45 billion, could be $50 billion. Last year was $62 billion by official estimate. You know what's fascinating, Evan? These astonishing figures now become normalized. There was a time Jim Flaherty in 2008 had a $55 billion deficit, was the biggest deficit in Canadian history, and people were jumping out of windows. Oh, my goodness, what is happening? What about the children? And now we're used to $60 billion, $50 billion. It doesn't even, no one flickers an eye. The budget officer mentioned this in a Senate committee. No one leaped from their chair and fled the room. It's now completely normal. These are staggering figures.
One of the things that I think we've been watching for in this transition to the new Liberal government is which files hit the wastebasket. Doesn't appear like there's going to be a sober second thought on this gun buyback program, which is now being budgeted at about a third of $1 billion. They're a dog on a rotten bone here, Tom.
It is. You talk about staggering sums. This is the highest figure we've seen so far from the Department of Public Safety that's managing the program. But there's a little pipe bomb built into those numbers, and it is spectacular. This is going to get expensive. So they estimate now $343 million going forward to compensate licensed owners to surrender approximately 118,000, their words, assault-style firearms. So far, so good. So they're asked in Senate National Finance Committee, now let's get down to the number of firearms. Where did you come up with that figure? And after probative questioning, it is determined that that figure is drawn from RCMP data 13 years ago. In fact, they don't know how many firearms they will be buying back at a charge to the taxpayer. Why does that matter? The feds have estimated this program could cost $400 million. The budget office says it could be twice as much. How's that for health care dollars? $800 million by the budget office estimate. Once you find out how many firearms you are actually buying back, I'm with you. This is even the Department of Public Safety says that we have no data that this will contribute anything to public safety.
No.
And you know in cities like Toronto, they're watching. The guns are just coming across the border at Niagara Falls and Ogdensburg, New York, down in Buffalo. This will do nothing for that program. It's so expensive, Evan.
Election promise that we saw was to cut federal spending on staffing and consultants. Reading on BlackRock's reporters' website this morning, federal managers who spend billions on consultants are now required to sign an oath saying they thought about it before they spent it.
It's true. This is on the level. This was a Treasury Board executive. He was testifying in Senate committee. This just happened. Emilio Franco's, his name is an executive director. People could look up. I'm sure he's on LinkedIn. And what did Emilio testify? He said, people are saying, are you getting a handle on this consultant spending? It's $25 billion a year. Billion with a B. And he said, we sure are. We have a new rule. It says if you're an executive for the government of Canada, before you sign off on a sole source contract that will pay millions and then billions to a contractor, to a consultant, you must ask yourself, why don't I quote him instead of characterizing it? Ask yourself whether you've thought about whether or not consultants are the right path to go forward. And if you do go forward, did you do a number of diligent steps to make sure there's integrity? End of quote. So, like, would they... What furniture warehouse would say this to the guys on the loading dock? I need you to sign an oath that we're going to deliver these microwave ovens, and I want you to ask yourself, this is a G7 country.
Yeah, it's when I actually read it twice to make sure I was reading it properly. So I'm putting a lot less faith in the fact that they're going to be able to follow through on that promise. One thing that I'm curious about, Tom, and I brought this up on the program. I've talked with callers and listeners about it. Not that long ago, like literally in recent memory, we saw Parliament grind to a halt on the refusal by the Liberal government to produce documents on that failed green tech fund. Is that just water under the bridge now?
In terms of Sustainable Development Technology Canada, and it was so expensive, the motion has not come back on that disclosure, and they want documents, and it was, everyone remembers famously, this was so bad. The cabinet shut down an entire government agency, been in business for 23 years, shut it down the afternoon that the audit came out. The entire board of directors resigned. The chief executive officer and president resigned. That motion has not come back. But I think we're in the phony war period right now. As you mentioned, Polyev looking for that seat out in Battle River Crowfoot in Alberta. And I think when the House comes back, which they are due a couple of weeks after Labor Day, all of these chickens are going to come home to roost. MPs in the opposition are deadly serious about some of these instances of alleged fraud, and it's not unfair to characterize them that way. That's what it said on one of the RCMP warrants, fraudulent billing. They are deadly serious about it, especially when we get that new deficit figure. You know, that is your health care. That's your money for the free school textbooks for the kids. And you can't be giving it to these people who wind up under police investigation.
Mm. Before we wrap up, we're literally up against the clock here. We've got about a minute and a half left. But Bill C-5, this is an act to enact the Free Trade and Labor Mobility in Canada Act. This was not born out of, but really emanated from that meeting that Prime Minister Carney had with the premiers. What do you think? Is this going to get put through? Is it going to hit some roadblocks? Where do you think this is going to land?
Definitely being put through. As we speak, it will be passed by the weekend. It is their signature bill. Lots of questions. The minister in charge, Intergovernmental Affairs Minister LeBlanc, who's from the Brunswick, was asked about this in Senate. It said, well, leave the terms. We'll work on the details later. You just passed that into law right now. Senator Wallen asked him, is there, premiers get a veto? Is there a veto? To which the minister replied, Vito's is an Italian restaurant on Mountain Road in Moncton. How's that for cynical? They'll get their bill.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I always appreciate you stopping by, Tom. Thanks so much for your time again today.
Thank you, Evan.
Tom Korski, managing editor of BlackRock's Reporter. Again, you can find them at blacklocks.ca or at Minding Ottawa on some of the social media platforms as well. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Tom Korski for stopping by. Always not only find him informative, but I always get a chuckle. I like the way in which he presents his answers, and a good friend of the show. And I know we always get good feedback, too, once we've got Tom on the show. People will just text in saying, love listening to Tom and how he explains things. Speaking of which, there was some, I would say, further clarification that came through yesterday from the point of view of our premier, Scott Moe, Alberta's premier, Danielle Smith. The two of them met in Lloydminster, and after having some meetings, they held a joint news conference, and basically, Premier Moe, at the start of it, laid out the purpose of the meeting.
And said this was a great opportunity for us to bring our caucuses together to discuss the very close alignment that we have in our ambitions to advocate and to represent abroad in markets of interest to both of our provinces and to our nation. And second is to work together mutually on working alongside what would hopefully be the federal government as well in really correcting some of the regulatory space that we have in this nation when it comes to the development of our natural resources and ultimately getting those resources to the world.
A lot of this should not be a surprise to Ottawa because both Premier Moe and Premier Smith have had communication with Prime Minister Carney multiple times, sometimes through letters, sometimes in person, laying out what they would like. Essentially, as Premier Smith put it yesterday, it's about having Ottawa stopping the interference on projects that are good for the economy, not just for the provinces, but for Canada. And in fact, yesterday, the point forms that we have seen both Premier Smith and Premier Moe lay out in the letter, she reiterated yesterday, these are the things we would like to see Ottawa do.
Guaranteeing full access to oil and gas corridors northeast and west, repealing Bill C-69, lifting the tanker ban off the BC coast, eliminating the oil and gas emissions cap, scrapping the so-called clean electricity regs, the net zero power regs, ending the designation of plastics as toxic, abandoning the net zero car mandate and returning oversight of the industrial carbon tax to the provinces, as well as halting the federal censorship of energy companies. Enough is enough. Development of provincial resources is provincial responsibility, and that includes the development of our transmission and electricity grids. And if we can unite in a common purpose, we can ensure that the rest of Canada hears our voices, that Ottawa should stop interfering.
Like I said, none of that should be a surprise to Ottawa, but it will be interesting between that news conference that was held yesterday, Premier Moe, Premier Smith, and some of the demands they made on Ottawa. And the news that we also talked about on the show today, given the fact that the Saskatchewan government has given notice to all Crown employees involved in energy production that they will be extending the use of coal for some time period. In fact, likely bridging the energy production from nuclear in the future to coal energy production that we are currently experiencing. So between those two things, this is maybe one of the first tests on how this relationship between our province and the federal government will go. How will Prime Minister Mark Carney and his cabinet respond to a couple of these pushes from the province? We'll, of course, continue to stay on top of that. Well, the wildfire situation not gone. It's markedly better. We have some good containment on some of those fires. We do, though, continue to highlight the incredible work that's being done in terms of wildlife relief in the province. I've got a leader joining me next.